Hello, it's Tuesday the 4th of October and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. North Korea has fired an intermediate-range ballistic missile over Japan for the first time since 2017. South Korea and the U.S. has responded by scrambling fighter jets to carry out precision strike air drills. We'll have more details in our news briefing shortly. And then later, we'll discuss the recent flurry of provocations by the North with an expert for our in-depth. And then coming up for Touch Base in Seoul, we meet basketball point guard S.J. Belangel, the first player from the Philippines who was signed by a KBL team this year after changes to the Asian quota rule. Let's begin Korea 24. Those are the sounds of sirens that played out in the Aomori and Hokkaido prefectures of Japan as part of the nation's J Alert system in the early hours of Tuesday. They were set off after North Korea fired what South Korea has assessed was an intermediate-range ballistic missile, or IRBM. Residents were ordered to take shelter. Some high-speed train services were temporarily halted. South Korea, the US, and Japan have jointly condemned the test launch as a clear violation of United Nations Security Council resolutions. For more on this and our other headlines of the day, we're joined on the line by KBS World Radio news editor Eunice Kim. Eunice, hello.
Hello, Jang-woo.
So in late breaking developments, we're hearing that South Korea has held joint precision strike exercises with the US in response to North Korea's latest provocation.
Yeah, that's right. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff saying that the Allies conducted this afternoon a flight of its combined attack squadron for a precision bombing exercise. It involved four F-15Ks on South Korea's side and four U.S. Air Force F-16 fighter jets. The precision bombing exercise fired at a target at the Jikdo shooting range in the West Sea, the JCS said, underlining that the exercises were a demonstration of the Allies' combined will to respond decisively to any provocation from North Korea and a readiness posture to inflict punishment. This after North Korea fired up an IRBM, what the JCS is calling an intermediate-range ballistic missile, this morning over Japan, something Pyongyang had avoided doing when it last launched an IRBM, the Hwasong-12, in January this year, then shooting up the missile in a lofted trajectory. Not so this time. As you heard, residents in Hokkaido and Aomori prefectures in Japan's northern sections were handed a rude awakening this morning, emergency alarms urging residents to remain indoors and taking shelter from falling debris as authorities in Tokyo tracked a flying missile overhead. The missile, which Tokyo said was fired around 7:22 a.m., was estimated to have traveled over Japan for about a minute, drawing strong ire from Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, who called it an outrageous act that followed repeated ballistic missile launches last week. Prime Minister Kishida from this morning.
North Korea is believed to have launched a ballistic missile. A ballistic missile is believed to have passed over our country and fallen in the Pacific Ocean. This is an act of violence following recent repeated launches of ballistic missiles. We strongly condemn this.
Japan later said the missile was believed to have landed thousands of kilometers outside of its exclusive economic zone after flying for about 22 minutes. The last time North Korea fired a missile over Japan, a clear provocation, was in September 2017, shortly after the fire and fury war of words between then U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Okay, let's get to the details of what we know about this intermediate-range ballistic missile then. What can you tell us?
Yeah, this marks the fifth missile launch over the past 10 days, on average, one every other day. But markedly more provocative also as previous missiles, seven in all were short-range ballistic missiles. Those had come, of course, amid joint naval exercises with the U.S. and later trilaterally with Japan and U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris's Seoul visit as well. Let's listen into what the Joint Chiefs of Staff had to say this morning.
우리 군은 오늘 오전 북한이 자강도 무평리 일대에서
The South Korean military this morning detected an intermediate range ballistic missile which North Korea fired from Mupyeongri in Jagang province. Fired eastward, the missile flew over the sky of Japan. Its flight distance was 4,500 kilometers, reaching an altitude of 970 kilometers at the speed of Mach 17. The South Korean and US intelligence authorities are conducting a further analysis.
So that range of 4,500 kilometers is significant, as it does put the U.S. territory of Guam, which houses a strategic naval base, within its range. Guam and Pyongyang are separated by a distance of some 3,400 kilometers. President Yoon Suk-yeol told reporters this morning North Korea's provocations would be met with a resolute response by the South Korean military and its allies, as well as the international community.
President Yoon also attended a meeting of the National Security Council, which issued a strong condemnation of the latest provocation. What did the council have to say?
Yeah, so the standing committee of the NSC denounced the IRBM launch as a clear violation of UN Security Council resolutions, describing it as a serious provocation that threatens peace on the Korean Peninsula and beyond, emphasizing that the continuance of such provocations cannot be tolerated. The participants agreed to seek various ways to bolster deterrence with the U.S. and the international community, including the reinforcement of sanctions. President Yoon, dropping in on the meeting, stressed that the latest provocation clearly violated the UN's universal principles and standards and urged officials to pursue enhanced trilateral security cooperation with the U.S. and Japan against the North's nuclear and missile threats.
Yes, we'll talk more about this latest launch in our in-depth later on this show. In the meantime, let's move on now to domestic politics. Today was the first day of parliamentary audits, and it erupted almost immediately between rival political parties. The main opposition Democratic Party demanded that Foreign Minister Park Jin leave the Foreign Affairs Committee audit and resign from his post. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, soon after the audit had commenced Tuesday morning, DP lawmaker Lee Jae-jong called on the PPP, the ruling People Power Party, to honor that motion that was passed last week, which called for Minister Park Jin's dismissal for a, quote, humiliating 30-minute meeting with Prime Minister Fumio Kishida in New York, among other reasons, which President Yoon had rejected out of hand. In the 30 minutes of sparring, PPP lawmaker Kim Seok-ki opposed the DP's call to remove the minister from both the room as well as his post, saying that Park should be given an opportunity to explain the government's foreign policies and the outcome of that recent presidential trip.
Another hot topic that pitted the rival parties was the state audit agencies sending a notice of questioning for former President Moon Jae-in over his administration's handling of the case of a South Korean fisheries official killed by North Korea in 2020. Can you tell us more?
Right. The audit at the Legislation and Judiciary Committee was stalled for some 50 minutes as both sides held up placards in protest. And when the audit finally began, the DP immediately characterized the Board of Audit and Inspection's notice to former President Moon for questioning as politically motivated and demanded that the board's chairman and secretary general both resign, charging that the agency had become a puppet of the Yoon government. The PPP blasted former President Moon for rejecting a written questionnaire and urged the auditor to proceed with a forced probe.
Finally, let's get a check on the COVID-19 figures for today, Eunice.
Sure, we are on an extended week in effect of less testing as the daily caseload came in the 10,000 range for a second straight day. The KDCA said there were 16,423 COVID infections throughout Monday, which was a holiday, 106 of which were imported. The number of seriously or critically ill patients dipped some 353, with virus-related deaths coming in at 19. This as new changes were implemented on this Tuesday, including that nursing home visits will no longer be obstructed by partitions in light of the recent improvement in the pandemic situation and the high rate of second booster vaccinations among residents and workers of such high-risk facilities. Nursing home residents will also be allowed to make outings or overnight trips if they have received their second booster shots.
That's all for our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
You bet.
South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said that North Korea fired an intermediate-range ballistic missile eastward Tuesday morning. This latest provocation was the regime's fifth in 10 days, and it prompted the Japanese government to urge residents in Hokkaido and the northeastern prefecture of Aomori to take shelter. For analysis on North Korea's continued provocations and speculation over a seventh nuclear test, as well as South Korea's approved admission to NATO, we have joining us on the line now Dr. James Kim, a research fellow at the Asan Institute for Policy Studies. Dr. Kim, hello. Thank you for being on the show today.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
So it appears one intermediate-range ballistic missile, or IRBM, was fired eastward on Tuesday morning. It flew over Japan, and it was the first missile shot over Japan since 2017. This latest test is the fifth provocation, firing eight missiles in 10 days. What was your reaction to this latest missile launch by North Korea?
I think it's par for the course for North Korea. You know, something that we shouldn't be surprised seeing coming from North Korea after COVID. I think Pyongyang is reminding everyone that it has the ability to conduct these tests, and it'll continue to do so. On one level, you know, it's these tests are quite expensive and very cumbersome to arrange. So some experts see a bright side to these kinds of tests in that they keep North Korea busy. They continue to pay a price in order to do these tests. But on the other hand, you know, the tests clearly show intent. North Korea wants to continue developing this capability. So we should be concerned about this.
Sure. Over the last few days, as we say, we saw five occasions where they launched eight missiles, but today was the only one which was an IRBM, and it flew over Japan. How significant was it that they launched a missile over Japan, that they crossed that line today?
Well, to the extent that the Japanese government is very concerned about these provocations, I think that's significant. But, you know, what's interesting about this particular test is just the timing that it comes on the heels of Vice President Harris's visit to the region and the fact that it's timed with some other events that are happening in China and in the U.S. So to that extent, I think the timing is interesting. The fact that they haven't gotten much attention during Vice President Harris's visit suggests to me that they wanted to up the ante a bit and rattle the cage a bit to get everybody's attention. In particular, I think U.S. is on their mind.
Mm. Some are saying that this is a response to the South Korea-U.S. joint naval drills that took place last week.
I mean, that clearly is. Again, that was last week. You know, why continue beyond, it's you know, we'll see, and there are other exercises coming up. So as this continues, this could be a response to that. But there you know, intelligence community suggesting, as you spoken earlier, that there are potential nuclear tests coming up towards the latter part of this month, maybe early next month. So, you know, a lot of possibilities here. But in terms of intention, I think it's very clear. North Korea now is signaling that they're through with COVID. They're ready to, essentially continue on the same path that they've been on, and maybe even signaling possibly, a desire to reengage. Some of these kinds of provocations often are followed by other types of reengagement of some sort. Mm. So we should be watchful and open to all kinds of possibilities here.
What's interesting about these latest launches are that North Korea's state media does not seem to be reporting on them. There's no mention of them, no accompanying footage or photos like we've seen in the past. What are your thoughts on this? Why do you think they're not publicizing or promoting the launches like they would have done in the past?
Well, this is why I think it fits with the framing that I had and in your previous question, and also the comment that you had made. That the intended audience here is less domestic than international.
Mm.
So, who are they speaking to? Well, South Korea, I think the short-range missiles are focused on South Korea, and perhaps the alliance, as you had suggested, when it comes to thinking about the timing of this with the exercises. But it suggests to me that there hasn't really been a strong response one way or the other last week. Other than just verbal condemnation, there hasn't been any developments, new developments on the desire of the United States to reengage with the North, and so that they're and for them to be upping the ante by possibly rattling Japan a bit suggests to me that this is really in one way or another somehow trying to do different things in order to get Washington's attention and elicit some kind of a response there.
Right, we'll wait to see if North Korean state media does make any mention of this latest launch in the next day or so. Meanwhile, the last time North Korea fired a missile over Japan was 5 years ago, and it was shortly followed by a nuclear test. We've been long bracing for the regime's seventh nuclear test, and last week South Korea's spy agency said that if it is going to come, it will likely take place after China's Party Congress and before the U.S. midterm elections. The window they reported cited to the National Assembly Intelligence Committee was between October 16th and November 7th. What do you make of that assessment? And judging by North Korea's recent actions, do you think another nuclear test is imminent?
Well, the South Korean intelligence community certainly thinks so. The Korean intelligence probably has, and here it's South Korean intelligence, probably has good reasons for why a test is likely during this window. So I wouldn't take these assessments lightly. But with North Korea, I don't think we can be sure of anything until something does in fact happen. So I think the focus should be less on whether they will test. We should assume that the seventh test is going to be coming, if not this month, if not next month, and somewhere down the line. What should we focus on then? Well, our focus should be on the response, and because these are the things that we can control, and that's something that that we have to be mindful of and prepare. So I think the response should be the focus, the thing that we need to focus on, less so than the tests themselves.
Right. On that note, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol warned that North Korea will face a resolute and overwhelming response from South Korea and the U.S. if it attempts to use nuclear weapons. He made such comments during a speech at an event marking Armed Forces Day last Saturday. That was shortly after North Korea fired two short-range ballistic missiles into the East Sea. He reiterated such comments today in his morning press briefings as well. What do you think the president has in mind when he says a resolute and overwhelming response? What can we surmise from that?
Well, I mean, I think any response, if you really think about that, any response can be resolute and overwhelming. So even though this may sound like strong words, we need to keep in mind that there's a range of different options available to President Yoon and the administration, and it can range from diplomatic to various degrees of military options. And so when he says resolute and overwhelming, you can have a resolute and overwhelming sanctions regime or resolute and overwhelming military response of some kind. I think it's just, a diplomatic kind of response to what North Korea has been doing. But we'd have to wait and see what they're going to do if they do, in fact, engage in a 7th nuclear test of some kind.
The National Security Council today condemned the launch, saying it will find ways to bolster deterrence, including a reinforcement of sanctions. The foreign minister, Park Jin, said that Seoul will respond and also mentioned sanctions as well last week. The Unification Ministry also said Friday that it will review tougher sanctions. What do you make of this talk about further sanctions? What remaining non-military sanctions are left for Seoul and Washington to pursue against Pyongyang?
Previously, a lot of experts have said that, you know, there isn't anything more that we can do on sanctions front. But I think there are more things that can be done, especially on enforcement, to get a greater compliance from companies around the world on following up with these sanctions and with respect to these sanctions. We just published a report a couple of months ago that touched on this topic, to show that there is more that countries can do, including South Korea, can do to further increase compliance on sanctions related to North Korea. Now, we can also increase the scope of existing sanctions to include third parties, and this relates to what we call secondary sanctions. This kind of action obviously would have consequences for trade with other countries like China, But it's the next level and the kind of things we can do on the sanctions front.
We also got some late breaking news today that the South Korean and U.S. Air Force scrambled jets to carry out precision bombing training. And that was in response to the North's IRBM missile launch today. What do you make of such responses of increasing training like this?
So these exercises are essentially preparations to get the troops and the forces to increase their readiness. And it's heartening to see that the administration is considering all options, not only diplomatic ones, but also various kinds of military options. Obviously, this particular military option is probably on the sort of the far extreme in terms of likelihood. And so I think the likelihood is relatively low that this option would be something that the administration is weighing at the moment. But the fact that the administration is working together with the United States to increase force readiness for these kinds of options is, you know, I don't think a bad development. And again, these are exercises, and this is to get the troops ready for all kinds of possibilities. So from the point of view of the government looking for various ways to deal with contingencies, it's not a bad thing to be weighing a possible extreme case scenarios like this.
What do you think will trigger further action from South Korea and the U.S.? Will they hold off for more sanctions or any further actions until perhaps a nuclear test?
Well, there's the nuclear test, and then there are other things that North Korea can do, right? We still haven't seen long-range ICBM with the capability of reentry with a warhead that is miniaturized and on top of that ICBM. So there's still a lot of things that North Korea needs to show, and I would expect that we would have more tests leading up to that particular point where now we're sure that North Korea has a nuclear capability that the U.S. should respect and be fearful of.
Okay, well, we wanted to ask you about another development before we let you go. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, has accepted South Korea's request to open a mission to the Intergovernmental Military Alliance. The North Atlantic Council agreed on Monday to accept South Korea's request to designate its embassy in Belgium as its mission to NATO, referring to South Korea as an active NATO partner. The Council noted ongoing political dialogue and practical cooperation between the two sides in a wide range of fields, including non-proliferation, cyber defense, counterterrorism, and disaster relief. How significant is this agreement?
I think institutionalizing the relationship in any way is a step towards formalizing and strengthening that relationship. So establishment of a diplomatic mission to NATO will mean more formal channels for coordinating with NATO. But if you look at history of this relationship, South Korea has sought to expand the cooperation with NATO since 2005. And in 2006, South Korea was named one of the contact countries, quote-unquote, contact countries that NATO has established some kind of a relationship with. But in 2008, South Korea was then elevated to a status of a global partner. And this relationship has continued. This is not anything new, but it is meaningful in the sense that the relationship is now formally institutionalizing. It allows NATO to be more engaged with the Indo-Pacific more formally, and in this particular case with South Korea. So it's an interesting development to be mindful of. This is not sort of something out of the ordinary. It's kind of in keeping with the historical trend that South Korea is in terms of South Korea's relationship with NATO.
However, China doesn't seem to be happy about South Korea's mission to NATO. China's state-run outlet, The Global Times, cited observers saying, guiding the way for NATO at the expense of diminished diplomatic autonomy will not serve Seoul's economic and security interests in the long run and will no doubt exacerbate regional confrontation and division. What do you make of their response? How upset are China and how important is that, especially when we consider what we saw with North Korea today as well?
Yes, China's preference is to keep South Korea as a neutral party in its competition with the United States. So any move by Seoul to strengthen ties with the U.S. and other allies in and outside of the region by strengthening cooperation in areas that can potentially threaten Beijing's security interests is not a good thing from Beijing's point of view. And the statement suggests that, you know, regional confrontation and division, using your words from Global Times, you know, this is not a given for Beijing. So we need to ask ourselves, if we're in Seoul and in South Korea, is South Korea strengthening ties with NATO causing the region to become more unstable? Or is South Korea strengthening ties with NATO because the region is becoming more unstable? This is the kind of question we need to ask. Was China's aggression towards South Korea matters like that due to South Korea's unilateral action against China? Or was it in response to North Korea's nuclear tests? Is economic dependence on China more of a liability, or is it more of an asset to South Korea? And these are like questions we haven't really been asking that much. We need to engage in a more serious debate and discussion about these issues, I think now more than ever, and we need to do that in forums like this.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. We've been speaking to Dr. James Kim from the ASEAN Institute for Policy Studies. Thank you once again for your time today.
Thank you, Zhang O.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 53.89 points, or 2.5% on Tuesday, closing the day at 2,209.38. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also rose, gaining 24.14 points, or 3.59%, to close at 696.79. On the foreign exchange, the local currency strengthened 3.71 against the dollar, ending the day at 1,426.51. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
We carry on now to Korea Trending, our daily segment where we round up some of the other news stories that people have been looking up online in Korea today. And for that, we have Jenny's Heart joining us in the studio. Jenny, hello. It's been a while. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Okay, so what topics have you brought for us today?
First, we'll talk about the newest measures by the government to relieve the current taxi crisis in the Seoul metropolitan area. Then we'll discuss the sharp increase in generation-skipping inheritance cases in South Korea. And finally, we will explore YG Entertainment taking legal action over the unauthorized release of Blackpink member Jennie's photos.
Okay, so for our first story, we recently discussed on the show the issue of a shortage of taxis, particularly in Seoul late at night, mm-hmm. and that was due to a sharp decline of drivers during the pandemic. And it looks like we have an update on that situation. Can you tell us more?
Yes, so the Ministry of Land, Infrastructure and Transport announced measures to relieve the late-night taxi crisis on Tuesday, including those that will make it difficult for taxi drivers to refuse customers based on their destinations. Some of these measures will be taking effect in the capital region as early as mid-October.
Okay, so can you lay out the measures for us?
Yes, a flexible call rate will be applied to rides hailed between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. from mid-October until the end of the year. The call service fees built into smartphone applications will increase to a maximum of 5,000 won, or roughly $3. And when the customer pays the fee, measures will be taken to guarantee them a ride, such as not displaying the destination to the driver. In addition, part-time shifts that allow taxi drivers to work only during high-profit late-night hours and relaxed job application procedures will be introduced at taxi companies.
I see. So one measure to tackle the criticism that taxi drivers do not pick up enough passengers going short journeys by not showing them the destination in exchange for a fee. And another measure to bring back more drivers to the industry. Yes. What else?
And mandatory days off will be lifted. Currently, taxis are divided into groups by the last digit of their license plate numbers, and the days that each group of drivers cannot operate are determined by the number. In the capital region, drivers are required to work for 2 days and rest for one. And other taxi hailing businesses will be allowed, such as Tada and Uber. And Minister of Land, Infrastructure and Transport Won Hee-ryong said, while there has been much controversy surrounding these services over the past few years, the ministry will not compromise on the vested interests that stop innovation.
Right, so that last point is interesting. Tada had been very successful for a short while a couple of years ago, but the taxi industry protested, and so then laws were introduced to regulate their operations, but that essentially forced them to fold their operations. Mm-hmm. Whether such companies can be persuaded to start up again will be interesting to see, and in the meantime, we'll also see whether all these measures will actually alleviate the taxi shortage crisis. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
Inheritance from grandparents directly to grandchildren under the age of one has more than tripled last year, reaching almost 100 billion won. According to related data submitted by the National Tax Service, the value of gifted assets to recipients under the age of one totaled 99.1 billion won last year. That's around $68.8 million. This is a 3.2-fold increase from the previous year's total of 31.7 billion won, or roughly $22 million.
Right. Do we know why we are seeing an increase like this in South Korea?
Well, by skipping the parents' generation and endowing the assets directly to the grandchildren, tax savings can occur by avoiding gift taxes applied when going through the grandparent's children. Under the current law, a 30% tax is added to transfers of up to 2 billion won, or $1.4 million, if the beneficiary is a descendant and is not a child of the donor. And since 2016, 40% has been added to transfers exceeding 2 billion won. The number of separate instances has increased to 784 from last year's total of 254.
Right. And these aren't just small amounts that we're talking about, right?
Right. Last year, the amount of generation skipping transfers to minors increased by 82% from the previous year to 1.11 trillion won, or $776 million. During the same period, the proportion of the total gifted property to minors under the age of one increased from 5.72% to 9.80%. Democratic Party of Korea Representative Jin Seon-mi said that despite a tax increase for generation-skipping transfers to minors, the number of cases continue to rise. And she added, the application of tax laws needs to be carefully checked for the property taxation of the gifted property for such cases.
Right, so this is essentially a loophole that people have been taking advantage of, and it does sound like there needs to be a review of whether it is being abused. Let's move on to our last story. What do you have for us today?
YG Entertainment, the management company of girl group Blackpink, has requested a police investigation to find a person who leaked member Jennie's personal photos. YG said in a press release on Monday they officially commissioned the police in September to investigate who first distributed the images after continuously monitoring the matter and collecting information. This comes 41 days after the first photos of Jennie and boy group BTS member V were leaked, reviving dating rumors.
Okay, so we should say that the pictures appear to be of Jennie and V. It was never officially confirmed whether it really was them or not, and the statement does not make it entirely clear if they were, in fact, Jennie's personal photos, but they are simply pursuing the person who distributed them. It's been a few weeks since the first photo surfaced, and neither YG Entertainment nor Big Hit Music had made any official statements until now. Can you remind us about the previous photos and what was in them?
Yes. The first photo of two people appearing to be Jennie and V circulated online on August 23rd, and it showed someone styling V's hair while Jennie can be seen taking a photo of their reflection in the mirror. The leak added fuel to dating rumors that started in May after a man and a woman, presumed to be the two singers, were photographed together in a car on Jeju Island. YG said that they refrained from commenting until now to minimize further damage, but they could no longer ignore the rumors, accusations, and personal attacks and sexual harassment that started from the photos. The agency added that they will be taking strong legal action against posts that damage the reputation and honor of their artists.
And I believe action will be taken against not only the person who initially posted the photos, but also third parties who spread the images online, right?
Yes, so YG Entertainment said the act of sharing the photos is a secondary offense and may be subject to legal punishment. The agency has asked the public to refrain from sharing the photos recklessly and warned that they will take all legal measures without any leniency for any additional damage that may occur in the future.
Okay, we'll leave it there. That's all for Korea Trending today. Thank you for those stories, Jennie, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
The new Korean Basketball League season is just around the corner, and fans are chomping at the bit for it to begin, especially with the players from the Philippines gracing the courts in the domestic league for the first time after the Asian player quota rules were changed. Previously, we spoke to Justin Gutang of the LG Sakers. Today on Touch Basin's Hole, we welcome point guard SJ Belangal of Daegu Kogyas Pegasus. He was, in fact, the first Filipino player to be signed under the new rules. He joins us now via video. Mr. Belangal, hello, and welcome to the show.
Hello. 안녕하세요. I'm SJ Belangal, and thank you for having me today.
Well, first off, welcome to Korea. How have you found Korea since you've arrived? Have you enjoyed it so far?
So far, South Korea is great. It's great. There's a lot of kind people, and they're all welcoming with open arms here in the Korea. So far, so good. I like Korea.
Well, that's good to hear. Have you been to Korea before, or was this your first time?
I've been to Korea before, but I mean tournament.
Right.
Philippines versus Korea, that game.
Of course.
But this is actually the first time that I've been to Korea, not just for any vacation, but like staying here.
Sure. Okay, this is your first time living here. Well, it was quite a brave decision to leave your country and to come to Korea, especially for your first pro league season after graduating from college this year. Can you tell us a bit more about how you came to Korea? Why did you choose to come to Korea and join the KBL? Did you have maybe any other options?
Mm-hmm. Basically, my options were if I go to Japan or I stay for another year in college in order to play my two remaining years, basketball career in college, or play in KBL. So I decided to go to KBL because it's my one of my dreams and prayers to play in international level. So when I heard about the KBL and knowing the history of Korean basketball, so it's a tough league, and I think for me it would be it would benefit for me in the future. So right here, right, I'm here right now living that dream, and every day, every practice, every time I step on the floor, every time I talk to my teammates and coaches, I've learned a lot. So with this, for me, that's why I chose KBL. It's because I want to learn not just Korea basketball, but also the culture here in Korea, which is I'm so very happy about learning different cultures. So I'm excited to learn more. And I know that my teammates and my coaches are there to teach me more Korean Korean languages and Korean traditions.
Sure. How were you approached by KOGAS Pegasus? Were there other teams from Korea calling? And what convinced you to go with KOGAS?
Basically, KOGAS just messaged one of the managers in the Philippines. They contacted him, and they told me that they wanted to talk to me and they wanted to recruit me. So when I arrived here in Korea to play Korea versus Philippines in the pre-matchup round for the FIBA, KOGAS, we met with the Kamdumnim and staff. So we talk about the plan. So basically, after that, basically it just happened. So I'm here right now, and I like the way that Kamdumnim and the Kuchinim and everyone here, the coaching staff, is helping me every day. So with that, I know that I'm in the great team, I'm in the good team, and I know that I'll benefit this in the future. So, that's it.
It seems like you're picking up the Korean language, the Korean lingo, very quickly as well. how does Philippines basketball compare to South Korea? When we spoke to Justin Gutang, he said it was faster and more systematic. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, basically, I would agree 100% with Justin. Because as we all know, everyone likes Korean basketball. That's why I wanted to go here, first of all, because I want to learn the system of Korea, like the way they play, the way they handle things, the way in any situation. So during the last time I played with Korea, the first time I played with Korea in the Philippines. So, like, while we are preparing to face Korea, where we're like, oh, we wish that we want to be like them, to play like them. It's like system. No one is like, no, the ball is not in only one person. Sure. The ball is moving, screens everywhere. Then, if you stop this option, there would be another option. Then, the play doesn't stop. It continues to evolve. It revolves around. So basically, I agree with Justin. It's like it's more systematic here, more running. That's the first impression that first practice that I learned here. Like the transition game is fast, and the recent games that I played, it's fast pace and very competitive. It's like every possession, you need to be focused and not lose your mindset every time you step on the court.
Has it been difficult to adapt? How have you found it so far as you've been preparing for the new season?
It's hard. It's hard. It's been difficult, but I know that my teammates have my back. My coaches have my back. So every time, every day, as I said earlier, they're the ones who is helping me in my everyday life here. They treat me as a family. So it has been a easier way during practices and games. And they are not afraid to tell something to me, which is why I like it, because when I have a mistake, they correct me. And if I do something good, they praise me. So I know what to do every time I step on the court. And Kamdum Nim and Coach Nim, everyone in the coaching staff is having a good time with me every before and after games, giving me videos about the practices, about the games, what do I need to improve on. So that after the games and before the games, like when we finish the game and practice, I know what to do. And I know what to improve on, what's my mistakes. And I know that my teammates is always there for me.
It sounds like you're learning quickly. You mentioned you playing for the national team against South Korea. I think a lot of Korean basketball fans will already be quite familiar with you because you broke their hearts maybe when you scored the game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer when you played for the national team against South Korea in the 2021 FIBA Asia Cup qualifiers. In a previous interview, you said that game was a big turning point in your life. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
In that moment, after that game, it's like my phone is broken. All the news, all the messages and stuff, I think my phone can't handle that much notification after that game. So that time, that game, like as you said, it's like the turning point of my basketball career. And I've been praying to God and worshiping him all day, that every day that I honor this to you. Whatever happened, every time I step on the court, it's all praise to you. So with that, I hit that shot, and that's the turning point of my career. And as I said earlier, my phone can't handle the
Has anyone in Korea since you've arrived talked to you about that shot? Has any fans brought it up?
Right now, I think not yet. Okay. But I'm pretty sure they know already. But some of my teammates already did. But especially with Dash, Dashyong, because he was there when I hit that shot.
Well, it was a tough loss for Korea, but I think we had respect for you after that as well. And fans say we'll want to see more of those game-winning shots in the KBL as well. Speaking of the upcoming season, what do you think you can bring to the KBL? What can fans look out for?
Basically, for me right now, it's all about the leadership inside the court. I know I have a lot of things to learn during the games, but I'll know soon, because preseason game is different to the actual games itself. So, but what can I bring as leadership when it matters, and when coach wants me to do something for the team, I can bring that. Also in defense, I can bring very physical defense and like very energetic defense, as well as in the offense. I'll be like smooth, only just following what the coaches wants me to do. And yeah, basically that would be it as of now, because every day I keep on learning with the coaches, so they want me to follow what they need to what they need me to do. So yeah,
you must be excited to face off against your fellow compatriots from Philippines in the league as well. What do you think Filipino players can bring to the KBL this year?
Basically, first of all, we know that everyone knows like Philippines when they play, it's like we play with all heart. So that's what we call puso. So that's it. That's what we bring every time we step on the court. Every Even it's like only a street game, but it's a game. It's a game. It's a competitive sport. So that's for me, that would benefit for us, like when we play each other, even though we face against each other, we're on different teams. But when we play, it's like we play with all heart, and we're a competitor, so we don't want to lose.
Sure. Well, it's going to be exciting to watch you play this year, I think. We wish you the best. We're going to leave it there. We've been speaking to SJ Belangal of Daegu Kogas Pegasus. Thank you once again for your time today.
Thank you so much. 감사합니다.
감사합니다.
춤추듯 날린 꽃잎 위로 그대의 웃음 덧대어지면.
My name is Son Tae-jin. You're now listening to Korea 24.
We've come now to our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features or reports coming out in tomorrow's newspapers, namely the Korea Times and the Korea Herald. And for that, we have joining us in the studio now our staff editor, Richard Larkin. Richard, it's been a while. It's good to see you again.
Good to be back.
Okay, so what do you have for us first?
First, we will look at an interesting festival that is currently being celebrated in Korea. It's called Sarang Festival, and it showcases India's legacy of civilization and vibrancy in Seoul. You can find Sanjay Kumar's article in the national section of the Korea Herald.
Okay, so Sarang Festival, I yes. believe it refers to the Korean word love, but also a Hindi word as well, which has similar meanings.
Yes.
So the festival takes a look at historic connections between India and Korea, right?
Exactly. The Indian ambassador to Korea, Amit Kumar, highlighted in a recent press briefing India's special strategic partnership with Korea, their Buddhist connections, and India's role in the Korean War. According to the article, India supported the UN Security Council resolution and gave humanitarian support by deploying the 60 Parafield Ambulance Medical Unit during the war.
Okay, so that's part of the history. Tell us more about what visitors can see at this event.
The festival will be held in areas all around the country, such as Seoul, Busan, Incheon, Chuncheon, and Gangwon Province. Festival goers will be able to see classical dance, musical renditions, and fusion music. A photo exhibition on the Indian chapter of the Korean War can also be seen.
And understand this year's event has been highlighted as quite special, right?
It has, for quite a few reasons. First, this year's Sarang Festival is significant because it is the first in 2 years due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Kumar also acknowledged the festival as a big event ahead of the 50th year of India-Korea diplomatic relations. The word Sarang is also apparently meaningful to both countries, like we said earlier. In Korean, it means love, and the ambassador said that in India, it refers to diversity representing different colors of India. The festival is open to the public and is currently running until October 14th.
Okay, let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
Well, today is World Animal Day, so I thought Park Hansol's article in the lifestyle section of the Korea Times would be a good choice. The article explains how animal rights and pet book sales have grown in South Korea.
Yes, it seems to becoming more and more popular to own pets than ever before in Korea, right?
It is. A recent survey found that 14.48 million people in Korea have pets. That's nearly one out of four Koreans.
Wow.
And because of this, related book sales have grown as well. The largest age group of buyers is those in their 40s and 50s. Around 70% of the total sales were made by them. Next are people in their 20s and 30s at nearly 25%. The literary works address topics such as animal rights, animal welfare, and ethics. As of September this year, sales are 4.8 times higher than the same period in 2018.
Wow, okay. So what are some of the most popular books being bought right now?
First is a revised edition of All Life is Beautiful. It was written by acclaimed ecologist and animal behaviorist Choi Jae-chun 2 decades ago. The book looks at fundamental idea of coexistence between human and non-human beings. Another is the graphic essay My Story on Veganism. The essay explores dietary practices and introduces the issues of animal rights, which continue to this day.
Right, so with the increase of pet owners here in South Korea, the interest in animal welfare has gone up as well, it seems.
Right.
Okay, we'll wrap it up there for Morning Edition Preview. Thank you for those stories, Richard, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
And that's where we wrap up our show for today. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow, so we hope you can join us again then. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye. And that's where we wrap up our show for today. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow. So we hope you can join us again then. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.
Saram, Chong, Ho, Sung.
The People I Love by Chong Ho Sung.
나는 그늘이 없는 사람을 사랑하지 않는다. 나는 그늘을 사랑하지 않는 사람을 사랑하지 않는다. 나는 한 그루 나무의 그늘이 된 사람을 사랑한다.
I do not love people who have no shadows. I do not love people who do not love shadows. I love people who have become the shade beneath a tree.
햇빛도 그늘이 있어야 맑고 눈이 부시다. 나무 그늘에 앉아 나뭇잎 사이로 반짝이는 햇살을 바라보면 세상은 그 얼마나 아름다운가.
Sunlight too needs shade to shine bright and dazzle the eyes. Sitting in the shade of a tree and watching the sunlight sparkling between the leaves, how beautiful the world is then.
눈물이 없는 사람을 사랑하지 않는다. 나는 눈물을 사랑하지 않는 사람을 사랑하지 않는다. 나는 한 방울 눈물이 된 사람을 사랑한다.
I do not love people who have no tears. I do not love people who do not love tears. I love people who have become one teardrop.
기쁨도 눈물이 없으면 기쁨이 아니다. 사랑도 눈물 없는 사랑이 어디 있는가? 나무 그늘에 앉아 다른 사람의 눈물을 닦아주는 사람의 모습은 그 얼마나 고요한 아름다움인가.
Joy too is no joy without tears. And is there ever love without tears? The sight of someone sitting in the shade of a tree, wiping away another's tears. What serene beauty that is.
You've listened to Korean poet Jung Ho Sung's 내가 사랑하는 사람, The People I Love, read by An Jae Woo and translated by Brother Anthony of Taiz and Son Jae. KBS World Radio brings the beauty of Korean poetry to the world. Don't even think about checking that message or texting back. Did you know it only takes 3 seconds after a driver's attention has been diverted from the road for a crash to occur? Texting while driving is 6 times more likely to cause an accident than driving under the influence of alcohol. Sending or reading a text message causes drivers, on average, to take their eyes off the road for 5 seconds, When driving at 80 kilometers per hour, that means that drivers travel approximately the length of a football field with their eyes closed. At KBS World Radio, we value our listeners' safety and well-being. If you're listening to our programs while driving via your mobile device, please hit play before you set off on your journey. If you receive a message or call while driving, either use a hands-free Bluetooth device to respond or wait until you've arrived at your destination. You're not just putting your life at risk. Distracted driving accounts for approximately 25% of all motor vehicle crash fatalities. Arrive alive.
KBS World Radio.